working class on DeerCast, and I don't know if this is a first. I'm going to claim it because why not? But I don't know if anyone's ever recorded a podcast quite like this. I'm with Mark Drury and Perry, and this is a specimen of a whitetail here.
He's the guest, right?
He's the guest, yeah.
He's the guest on the podcast. We're just the co-host.
We should have got him a headset.
He's the star of the show.
He is the star of the show. This is
a showstopper.
Do we want to go in right away and talk about how big this deer is? Because I don't know if someone's ever maybe someone's podcasted over a buck, but I don't know about a buck this big.
Maybe, and we just pulled him out of the cooler. So
he's cold.
But he's freezing cold. Yeah. So we got him out of there to do this because Kurt, he was coming over today anyway. And he was like, can we do a podcast over that deer? Because I killed him last night. And I was like, sure.
I didn't know you killed this deer.
True, yeah.
And I was planning on coming today anyway. And yeah, and then you texted me last night. We had a podcast at our studio. You texted me last night and said, hey, I have a surprise for you. And I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever that is, you know. And then you must not have been able to take it. You couldn't wait.
Finally FaceTimed
him. He FaceTimed me, and I'm like, what?
And I'm like, he's in bed. And I'm like, how many times you FaceTimed me in bed or podcasted me while we were in bed? And I was like, hey, I got to show you something. So we were having a good time celebrating.
We were having a great time.
I don't think anybody watching or listening, if you're listening, you need to get on and watch this because no one would blame you for this. This is a whitetail unlike anything I've ever seen in person in the flesh. This thing is just exactly what you want in a big Midwestern mature whitetail. And I don't even know where you want to take the story first. I don't know where the buildup is on this. But all I know is I'm excited to be talking to you guys and podcasting true hunting camp fashion. Literally. Over the whitetail himself.
Yeah, you don't get any more raw or in the moment than this. I mean, he hasn't been dead 24 hours yet.
Yeah, so. No.
Yeah.
It's a long story with this guy. In fact, we're doing a series called Deer Season 21. And during the summer, we have summer picks from a lot of different farms and whatnot. And he was really the best deer we had pictures of, obviously.
Yeah.
And Josh was like, I'd really like a big deer for the static, you know, the thumbnail on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I was like, use this one. He's the biggest deer we have pictures of.
Yeah.
And he leaves every year. So I said, go ahead and use him because he ain't staying anyway. I mean, I've had pictures of him since he was 3 and a half.
Yeah.
And he'd shed his velvet, and he would either leave just prior to shedding his velvet or the moment he shed his velvet, and he was gone.
Just wasn't his fall range is what you were thinking?
I just assumed he just went rutting somewhere else, and I didn't know if that was a half mile, a mile, or 10 miles because they do move a lot. I just knew it was somewhere safe because – he kept showing back up the next summer. I'm like, oh, there's the disappearing act. That's what I call him. Like, he'd disappear every fall. And for whatever reason, this year, I about blew me away when I got his picture hard horn in mid-September. And I'm like,
he's here.
Perry, check it out. He's here.
There's a chance.
Well, but I'm like, he's going to leave. Yeah. You know, I'm convinced he's just not left yet. You know?
Also, this year, he was the biggest. Prior to the years, we had other big deer.
Yeah.
So maybe he got run out.
You know, okay.
That's my theory is hierarchy change. But still, rut range is rut range for whitetails. They often don't do what this deer did. So,
thankfully.
Thankfully. It's like, he wasn't even on the radar.
No.
Because of just prior patterns.
Our pre-fall plans. Like, he did not figure in any of the plans because he leaves.
Yeah.
We would have never put him as the YouTube static for Deer Season 21.
No. Yeah. I'm not going to put a 216-inch deer on YouTube and go, look what we, you know.
Yeah, I mean, right.
I'm private about certain things, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, you're just not going to.
Everybody,
but I was convinced he was going somewhere else. So
for sure. that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I knew he was an incredible specimen. Like, we got pictures of him this summer. I was like, oh, man, look what Disappearing Act did this summer. And I knew he was entering he's 6 and a half, because I've had pictures of him since he was 3 and a half. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And then mid-September, I'm checking a Reconyx camera, and I'm getting pictures of him. And I'm like, he's on the farm, you know? And I'm like, I can't even believe this. And then 30th of September, last picture. Gone.
Nothing.
I'm like, all right, now he left. He's just a
there
month behind.
There he goes. Okay. Back to the
month behind.
He did daylight, though, that day. Like, he was out in the plot.
Yeah, he daylighted on the 30th, and then not another picture. And I was like, now he went wherever he goes.
For sure, yeah.
And then,
which would make sense from for what you knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, the night of the 6th of October, I get a picture at 11:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. on the plot he had daylighted at. So it's the middle of the night, and I'm like, sent it. We have a group text or a group shared album. Myself, Perry, Wade, Josh, Carson, Taylor. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I look at all the cell reports daily from Missouri and Iowa, and I throw them all in the shared album so that everybody sees the information that I pulled out of all the files.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I text Perry because Wade's in Alberta. And I was like, it came back. I was like, we got trying tomorrow night.
At 11 at night.
11 at night.
Yeah.
Middle of the night picture. I'm like, we got to try.
Yeah, we got
to
go.
This may be our only opportunity to hunt this deer. Mm-hmm. And I went back and looked at his pictures from the, I think it was the 28th or 29th of September. I had a middle of the night picture of him. Mm-hmm. And then he daylighted on that plot the next night. And I was like, we're liable to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all day yesterday, this was the most eerie thing about this story. Taylor came to me four different times. She'd grab me and she goes, you're going to kill that deer tonight. She goes, I just feel it. She goes, I've got this strong, eerie, crazy feeling. You're killing that deer tonight. Mm-hmm. I mean, her intuition was, it gives me chills to think about it. She was emphatic about it.
She said
told
it
everybody in camp about
times.
It. Multiple times. She goes, you're killing him tonight. I can feel it. And sure enough, like Perry, we were in the blind, and the setup is like basically a football field, mm-hmm. white-tailed deer radish plot. And then 300 yards or 250 yards of grass that's tall as Perry, you know.
The nastiest you've seen.
It's really a jungle, yeah. Right? And there's big willow thickets. It's a big bottom field, and we have 30 acres of solid cover at the south end of this bottom and a plot in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And Perry's like, I see deer back there. Like, I saw some movement in the grass. Just quick, you know,
flash,
fleeting glance.
Yeah.
And I threw my Leupolds up, and he was in one hole in the grass, standing there facing the plot. And I go, it's him. I go, it's him. And he couldn't see him. So I grabbed the camera, got a little footage, and then he spots him. So I give it back to him.
Yeah.
And he marched through the grass. It's like a parting of the Red Seas. The grass is just like his rack is coming through that grass. And
he comes 200 yards and everything. He's just moving the grass. And just
nothing like shaking us to the core.
Oh,
right?
I can only imagine.
Because he's a showstopper.
Don't mess up, Perry. Get it on film.
When you get in a moment, like, you have faith in who you're with.
Hey, yeah.
There's not going to be a
slow
mess.
Slow the game down.
100%.
I was trying to. It was almost impossible.
It's to be hard with this.
It was almost impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, just like I said, but he's the star of the show. Like, you just don't see whitetails like this.
My buddy Jim Burns, growing up hunting, they just don't come around.
Nope.
That's what he always said.
They don't exist.
Yeah, right.
They don't exist,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Look at 1.5 to 2 million photos a year, and these are never in them, right?
Yeah.
He was this year, but that's only because he reached, you know, an age of 16.
Everything worked out for him.
And maybe somebody will watch this podcast and go, I know that deer, and I'd love to know
that'd be cool
where he went every year.
Yeah.
I always wonder that.
Somebody knows him, I would assume.
I would think so. You know, a deer like this, you know, even someone sees him on, like, cross a road somewhere in front of him. Like, you see a deer like this, and you go, I saw a... You know, that's how legends and rumors get spread, is deer like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Deer like you've never seen before.
Deer like you've never seen before. And I wonder if, I always wonder when we talk about big bucks like that, if those kind of more behind the scenes stories will come out after. And
sometimes they do.
It's cool, I think, you know. Like we did the giant tracker with Munson, big buck, and he found out afterwards when they were butchering it, they found a broadhead in it.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of came in, I think, after the giant tracker article write-up segment was posted on DeerCast. And I wonder if that person will reach out.
And sees this.
And say, hey, I shot a buck last year that looks similar to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything like that adds to that buildup for that whitetail, which I think is cool to their timeline.
It is cool.
Cool story.
I'd say.
So, but, I mean, you could get – I mean, he went straight to the cooler. Who knows? You could get to cleaning him up. Know what I mean? You could find a head in him or something crazy. Who knows?
You never know.
Yeah. That's what adds to the timeline. You just wonder where they went and what happened to him while they were gone.
No doubt.
But go back into – so he's coming through and you're trying to slow the game down. I imagine both of you guys are in your own way.
What's your perspective at that point? I mean, he's walking right into your lens, essentially.
Yeah, he's walking right at me. I just don't shake the camera and
yeah.
make sure the numbers are ticking on the record.
Right, yeah, like what I'm doing right now just to make sure.
Yeah.
Control the breathing.
He walks into that radish plot and faces us and eats for a little bit, and he got to 37.
And Perry's going, how far is he? And I'm giving him.
Yeah.
So he knows.
Yeah.
Okay, he knows what distances I'll shoot at and what I won't. So I said 37, you know, and I'm like, but – when he got to the field, there was three or four other bucks out there eating, and they all just—they're like, it was funny. They all stopped eating, and they all walked right past us at under 30.
Yeah,
and on either side of us, and I'm like, he's gonna follow him.
Yeah,
but he didn't. He cleared the plot, and then he put his head down and didn't stop eating.
He's like, all right, this is.
He
mine.
Was mauling those deer rashes. Perry's got footage of him hanging out both sides. I mean, it's
a whole plant just in his mouth.
Really?
Yeah,
they love those deer radishes, man.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And he turns broadside and kind of walks away from us a few yards. And
I just lost yardage, you know, because he's at 37. I thought he's going to continue to work past us because behind us, behind all this brush, is a huge 20-acre corn and bean field, right?
Yeah,
destination food source, which is generally the flow. They come through the green and they go way out in the middle of the big bottoms. But he didn't do that. He turned away, and I'm like, ah. Stupid. Dumb. I just passed a 37.
Idiot.
I heard the release clip onto the string when he turned away, and I thought, okay,
we're in business.
And then he parks himself directly behind the scrape tree. We have a scrape tree in this plot, and just stands there. We lose another 5 minutes right there.
Yeah.
And then he finally came out from behind it, and I'm shaking, trying to get the range, and I get 55, I get 22, like I'm all over, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, none of this is real.
Anybody would be experiencing the same situation.
So I keep clicking, I 43, I go, okay, I'm on him finally, you know? So he was 43 point something or another, and I told Perry, I said, here we go. Mm-hmm. So then I was lucky to hit him good, you know?
Yeah. Smoked him.
Hit him real good.
Smoked him.
Yeah, you showed me the quick shot before we started recording, and it is, I mean, you couldn't put it any better.
No.
Really? I mean, so you had to have slowed the game down your head mentally to.
I did.
You have to on a deer like this, because I think I'd be falling apart.
Oh, 100%.
Because I'd be.
We both were.
Yeah. I'd be calling Loophole and be like, hey, can you make like a 200-inch deer image stabilization for your rangefinders? Help me out.
Yeah.
But I can't even imagine.
He runs 40 yards and dies. On film, in the plot.
In the radishes.
In the plot. It didn't leave the radishes.
Nope.
No. I don't know if it was 40. It wasn't 40.
Yeah, it was.
It might have been 30.
Yeah.
I mean, he did not go far.
Give me your mindset. I want both of you guys. Give me the mindset reaction when you see that arrow land where it hit him.
Well, I said it.
Yeah, he said.
Immediately, I go, smoked him 43 yards. I immediately said it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And you, I mean, you're watching it through the camera.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you see it probably even better than he sees it.
Yeah, and then immediately my reaction, like this, that shot and making that shot, like I'm capable of that shot. Last year I had a deer in the same plot, and I hit him back here, and I hit his artery, and I was lucky enough to get him. There's a deer we call BW, but I'm like, what did you just do? Like, I mean, I practice at 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 yards so that when you get a shot.
It's easier.
It's easier.
Yeah.
And I can make those shots. And I squeezed my bow. And when I squeezed my bow, I hit high right, you know, it's torque out of excitement.
Yeah, yeah.
So towards the end of the season, I took some carpet and turned it upside down where it scratched my hand. And I would remind myself, because I'm not slowing the game down, obviously. I'm over squeezing.
Yeah.
And in my reaction, I told Perry, I was like, I worked all summer to make sure I don't do this again because owe it to them to make an ethical shot.
Yep.
That's not right. That's unacceptable for me or anybody else.
For sure. Yep.
And I'll be the first to say that. I was so mad at myself last year because I made two not great shots. And I'm like, this is ending. Mm-hmm. Like, so mentally all summer, I'm like, I am not going to do this ever again. I saw Levi at the Matthews Summit this summer. And I was telling him how I put the carpet on there as a reminder. And I said, I need something sharper, you know, so I never squeeze it again. He goes, hey man, I know a guy that's got some prototypes coming out.
Yeah.
And he had them sent to me, and I'll show you on my bow.
Yeah.
But I mean, they
don't ever grab Mark's bow.
It is painful to grab my bow.
this is like a training device.
It's like a little button with a spike on it.
Yeah.
And you feel it. Anybody that grabs it goes, wow, you know,
no,
but
kidding.
I can feel it. I put my hand out there and you touch it and you're like, it's loose grip, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Leveled my level and took my time and I slowed the game down and I was breathing correctly and I let it fly. And I mean, it hit exactly where I was aiming and he didn't drop. So,
dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, this is the exit hole here if you're watching and it's just money. It's perfect. So, killer shot. Way to keep it together, because I don't know if I'd be able to do it. This buck is just massive.
Sometimes when you make mistakes, you make yourself better, right?
Yeah,
you're like, don't let this happen again, you know?
Definitely. That's why we practice.
We're out there to make clean kills, not,
For sure. And that's what, you know, I had that mule deer hunt coming up, and, you know, it was high pressure for me, you know, going in. First deer hunt since my dad passed and stuff, and I told everybody shooting. I was like, I'm shooting my bow this summer like I'm training for a fight. And that's what I did. And you have to.
Yeah.
Muscle memory's got to take over.
And it paid off. So,
yep.
And you just need to keep after it. But, you know, I mean, way to keep it together and slow the game down on this stud. So, talk to me like he goes and falls, and then what? Like, what happens then?
Good thing the blind walls are sturdy because we were both leaning against some light.
We were. It was crazy. It was hot in that blind. There was a lot of breathing, a lot of body heat right there in that moment. Yeah. So, we just let it all loose then.
I bet.
That moment till 4 in the morning, we let it loose.
Yeah,
from the moment he fell till 4 a.m., we did not stop letting it loose. We
That's
had a good,
awesome.
Good night last night.
So what – I mean, how much time do you give this deer? Like, are you the guy that, like, let's go get our hands on him, or did you just soak in the moment until you got up to him? Or, like, how much time did you wait for you went and put your hands on
him? Immediate. We did a few things in the blind that we needed to do and got our stuff, and we went to him immediately.
Yeah.
And then – proceeded to get swarmed by mosquitoes. It's a nasty wet bottom, and they were in there, man. That camera light came on and it went whoo!
Yeah, they're all right here. I'm filming. There's a camera light. It's just
but we did our recovery, tagged him immediately, and then the access into that bottom is quite a jaunt around the farm through a pasture, and we had to get out and then come all the way back around and then go through the heart of the farm. So that allowed us to wait for Carson and Taylor and also Josh. So we all, as a group, family, went down there and recovered the deer together.
That's awesome, man. God, that's got to be so fun. This thing is, I mean, this is the surprise, right? You know, I get here, I'm like, we're podcasting over this buck because, you don't get the opportunity. Like, deer like this don't come around, man.
They don't exist.
And it's 216 and
5/8.
5/8.
Mm-hmm. And we measured him slowly and carefully last night. Added it a few times. And
I don't think there's any question.
And one side, this side was 101 or
101 and a few ace. Yeah.
Yeah. His left side's 101 inches.
No kidding.
With beams, mass, and spread, he's like 120 something.
Yeah.
Beams, mass, and spread. That's incredible. Well, I mean, there's no question that deer is what we're saying it is because, I mean, and I don't know. I know he looks big on video. But when you get around a deer like this and you're taking photos with your phone and you're looking at it, you're just – it's incredible.
Well, his beams, one was 29 inches, one was 30. Those don't exist either.
Mm-mm. That's insane.
No.
That's absolutely insane. I'm an official measurer, and I always say, like, you start to see good measurable deer at, like, 25. Like, 24 is getting good. Like, 25 beams is, like, getting
really,
good beams.
Really, really good, yeah.
So you get bucks.
You see a lot of beams in the 20 to 22 inch range.
A lot. Most deer are 20 to 22.
Most mature deer are 20 to 23.
Yep. And then I know, like, you get a buck that does 26, 27 beams. You're like, ooh, good.
Whoa,
beams.
Big.
Good beams, you know.
Different class.
My old man's last buck, I measured the buck. He was a clean 8 with a kicker down here off his base, like right above his eye. I'm guessing, he's probably mid 40s, a good 8, you know, just an 8 with that. I measured it, and I didn't account for his beams and his threes. 160 even, 27-inch beams.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, he's shaped funny.
Because you never look at one and go, oh, he's got a 27-inch beam. You can't, anticipate that because it's so rare.
Well, and then the way the buck grew, he was, like, cantered a little bit. Like, one beam kind of went in, and he grew kind of off to the side. So he was deceiving. He looked tight on one side but wide from the other. And so I'm like, 160? So I measured him two other times. I'm like, oh, yeah, just – I didn't give him the credit the deer deserved, really, for what he was. So, yeah, I mean, a deer like that is just – he's got everything. I mean, he really does.
He's got it. And he had our full attention, I can promise you that.
Yeah. He did not leave property. I mean, he stuck around just long enough to pay for it.
just we're very blessed. Like I said, he went from not on the radar to, let's go try. Maybe he'll come out.
Yeah.
I mean, literally that. So
what do you think? I mean, you know, you said you got the picture of him, you know, at like 11:30 p.m. And then he daylighted it, and then you got a night photo of him?
No, or he had been gone a week.
Gone a week, okay.
Yeah, and then I got a nighttime picture, and I was like, oh, I'll be doggone, he did come back. Because when he left on November 30th, I'm like, or September 30th, I'm like, he's gone for good now. You know, this is when he did his deal. But I got that 11:30, and I'm like, maybe he is going to stay.
I thought he had daylighted. I thought maybe
he did back in September.
Okay. September 30th, he daylighted.
Yeah, like 29th, I got a nighttime picture, and then he daylighted the next night, and I'm like, maybe he'll do it again. He did.
What do you think that is? Do you think it's just, I don't know if there's a pattern there to look at or to acknowledge, or if it's just what
this time of the year, this phase, we're in phase two, greener pastures. They're not moving yet. Like, they're not traveling and looking. They might on an occasion, but right now they're pretty much eating and bedding.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if he's there 11:30, he's probably could be close
in
tomorrow.
There somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got the bedroom.
We got the bedroom. I call it my Buck Hotel.
Buck Hotel.
Yeah. He was a guest last night.
That's the nasty stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. It's stupid.
You step two steps into it, and you're like, I'm not walking any farther.
Yeah.
I'm turning around.
I'm good.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's where I killed BW last year. He was 180-something.
181, I believe.
181. It came out of the same grass. Man. I mean, they just love it right there. It shades real good, real early.
Yeah. And this buck's giving Danger a run for his money on score.
Essentially, the same Danger was like 4 or 5 eighths larger than him. And Bucktober would have been the same had he not broke off that inside time.
Yeah, so, that's incredible, man. How cool.
I mean, we're kind of speechless about it, honestly, because you just don't expect to see him, and we did.
You know what my favorite thing is, man, and I'm sure you probably have a similar perspective of what I do, and I'm doing this to give you credit and maybe see, like, you know, growing up watching you and as one of my childhood hunting idols and everything. And you would almost think, for the amount of, like, work you've done and the amount of deer you've killed and big deer that you've patterned and have been successful on, that I think it'd be easy for someone who doesn't know you to maybe be like, oh, yeah, like, you might not be as appreciative of it as you'd think, like, if somebody else were to shoot it. And I'll tell everybody listening or watching, that is not the case, because I wouldn't have got that excited phone call last night the way I did. And the whole time since we've got here to record podcasts, it has been excitement and high vibes over this animal. And so I will say, and I never doubted you on that, but I just want to clarify for that. If anybody thinks that you don't appreciate these animals because you've killed some big deer, that is not the case. You are just as thankful for this animal as if how I would be if I shot it. So it's cool.
Next to family and God, Perry's got the same DNA. That's why I love the Mossy Oak pattern this year, and I'm not wearing DNA today, right now, but DNA is like, what a great name, because your DNA, his DNA, mine, Wade's, Taylor, everybody watching this right now is identical. It's that hunting passion. It's the reason we all go out there and do it. And, you know, whoever would have been sitting behind it, like, the feeling is unbelievable. It's euphoric. Yeah. It's a euphoric sense of holy cow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a deer you just don't ever get to see, and then to have the opportunity to have pictures of him, and then to go see him, and then actually kill him, like, it's a rare occurrence, and we feel so blessed and thankful.
Yeah,
and it's that DNA that keeps you going and loving it and loving what we do. Like I said, God, family, and country, frankly. And then white-tailed deer and wild turkeys. And probably wild turkeys and white-tailed deer. But come on. I'm the same way with every wild turkey, right?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one, I freak out. Like, really? I love it so much.
Yeah.
Turkeys are cool. I'm not saying they're not.
Turkeys are life.
There's
turkeys
no turkey that's this cool.
Perry, I'm glad it occurs in the spring.
Come on, Perry.
I'm a turkey hunter.
Come on, man. I'm the only guy in here that...
Love big white-tails, but if I had to pick one, I was turkey hunting.
I'd pick it too, and that's saying something sitting here over a 200
inch
deer.
It is.
Hey,
to go back to your point, if Mark wasn't excited, he wouldn't have FaceTimed you at 11:30 while you were in bed.
Right? I'm like, well, I got an answer.
I didn't care either. Everybody's like, you can't do that. I go, oh yeah, I can.
Watch me.
I go, he has called me so many times in bed doing a podcast, and I'm like,
what, Kurt?
Finally got him back.
So. That's what you said too. I'm like, Mark, I'm in bed. How many times have I answered your phone calls late at night to do podcasts? I'm like,
check this out, bro.
Touche. Oh, okay. That's worthy of a FaceTime anytime. Definitely. Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
An absolute stud.
Yep. Lucky. Lucky.
Good work.
And in a special place. It's cool down in that bottom. And frankly, 2 or 3 years out of five, we don't have a food plot down there. It floods all the time. It's a really low bottom.
No kidding.
And we're in a drought and a dry year, and that's why there was food there. Otherwise, there wouldn't. More often than not, we don't get to put a plot in there. Awesome. We've had 3-4 years in a row where we lose them. We'll put them in.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll come up, get a 3-inch rain,
dud,
underwater. Wade and I went and replanted it. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago on DeerCast. People that might remember that. We were down there replanting it, getting torn up by mosquitoes, you know, and then we lost it again. It's stupid how many times we've lost that plot. But when it works and you're in a drought, it works. It's gold.
It's killer.
It's magic.
Well, I'm glad it held up for you because, man, it paid off. It's incredible. And I don't know. We'll claim it. We'll say we're the first podcast to do a full-length podcast over a 216 and some change inch buck. I don't know if it's ever been done. I'm sure it has. But
hey, we'll give you that credit, brother.
I'll take it. You know, whatevs, right?
Why not? Yeah, I'll take it. Why not?
Well, I don't know where to go from here, man.
I don't know.
This is incredible.
On to the next one.
On to the
next hunt, whether it be Perry, Wade, Taylor, whoever, man. Every day is a special day around here because we're out there chasing and doing what we love. And
yeah,
the prep work's all done, and then you get in there and actually go hunt. I made a comment in one of the Deer Season 21s. I go, we shoot them during the season, but we kill them now. And I was talking about summer preparation and stuff. And this one is in that category.
For sure. Definitely. Beautiful buck. It's incredible, man. And I think we'll probably put a giant tracker segment on this episode. But I'm just going to end it with go shoot a giant, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
I hope everybody shoots one this big. I really do.
I do too. It would deer hunting dreams come true for everyone all around. All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We appreciate you. Go shoot a giant.
Please do. Big one. Then tell us about it.
Giant tracker.
All right, guys. Giant tracker segment number 3 at this point. And so big bucks are already falling. This is a fresh one from this season. And Michael Munson's joining me on this segment. Thanks for doing this kind of during the workday, kind of last minute. But man, what a killer buck you got already this season.
Thanks, brother. And no problem at all. It's an honor to be on here. Man, I shot him in Southeast Kansas. I was actually reluctant to even put in this year because, I have a new son at home. He's a year and a half, and I was really wanting to spend a lot of time with him.
Yeah.
So I put in for Kansas muzzleloader thinking I wasn't even going to draw out because I was going to put in for a preference point and, when it came time, I was like, oh, I drew out. So I've hunted the same place up in Kansas forever. Mm-hmm. And man, it's just the daytime. I just don't see many during shooting hours. I'll have some 160s, 170s, just
right.
Every few years. Well, I was up turkey hunting in Kansas a few years ago. And my cousin had told me I need to come up and try his place. I'm like, well, I knew there was some, you know, there was some bean fields around, you know, there's some crop fields around and there was some good cover, but his was all Bermuda pasture and he'd been running cattle. Well, I went and set some cameras up there, some cellular cameras, and for 2 or 3 months and had nothing on camera. Like,
yeah, that's encouraging, right?
I was like, well, this is going to be another year, another wash. Well, oh, well, I'm going to get to spend some time with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were working cattle at work. Oh, what was it? It was earlier towards the beginning of the month of September, which season opens there the 13th.
Oh, pretty dang early compared to everywhere else.
Yes. Yeah. And I got a text on my phone or, you know, notification.
Yeah.
And there was this giant and I like my heart immediately started racing. You know, a buddy that works with me at work, I immediately said, look at this, you know, I'm probably not going to kill this deer, but look how big he is. You know,
right. I was
pretty amped up.
So this bug just showed up out of nowhere. You had no like hints that there might be a stud like this or anything.
No, I had no inkling at all. I knew there had been history of big deer here. My cousin was telling me, but I'd ran cameras for 2 months with does and a few spikes. Well, he rotated his cattle out of this buck was coming from some heavy timber and cutting across this. There was a little draw and he was cutting across it on my cousin, then going out to this bean field at night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he would come back in the, conversely, he'd come back in the morning. And I didn't hardly have any cover out there. There was one little cedar tree tucked in the middle of, it was right in his fence line. And it was about 200 yards from where I thought he'd been traveling. So I decided to set up there. And
just like in a ground blind, or what, or did you set up like with no blind or what?
I talked to one of my best friends about it. You know, Brian Beecham, him and I had done a lot of talking back and forth about, you know, trying to set up. I went up there a couple of weeks before season, and I'd found another cedar tree to the south. I guess it was to the west, but for a south wind, I was going to set there. For a north wind, I was going to set at this cedar tree, and that's where I ended up killing them.
Yeah.
But it was just like, there was hardly any cover. I didn't put up a ground blind because, I was scared, you know, it was going to push them out of the area.
I'm always scared of that too. You know what I mean? Like, cause I don't know, I'm not a big ground blind guy. I want to kill like a big buck out of a ground blind, but I'm always really weary about that too. Like popping one up and then making it kind of like have a buck on a pattern, like reroute. And then you're kind of out of the chips.
Yeah.
So tell me, like going into that point, you kind of scout out these places. How many trail cam photos were you getting of this deer leading up to that point?
It was like September 9th, 10th, and 11th, which is three, four, and 5 days before season.
Yeah. So you're getting like really excited at this point, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm getting really excited because I actually got a daytime photo on the 10th. And
oh dang. So right in the wheelhouse there.
Oh yeah. I wasn't as excited until I got that. And that
right
at that point I showed the picture to my boss and I'm like, man, if there's any way you can please let me off, you know, just for this early season muzzleloader, I'll work however many hours I need to for the rest of the season. You know, I had to do whatever I could to try to get
it. I mean, yeah, I don't blame you for doing that. It's a decent trade too.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm back at work hooked up. That's kind of the give and take.
And then he let you off to do the podcast. He's like, man, I didn't think this deer would create all these obligations. I bet is what he's thinking now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know. Now. Yeah. I thought he was going to be here every day now.
Yeah. What the heck?
Well, thank you, Jim, for letting me off for a little bit.
Yeah. Shout out to your boss. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Shout out to my boss.
So, I mean the 10th and season opens the 13th, right? Is what you said.
Yeah. Yeah. So I go up and I hunt opening day, see nothing. He disappears, or actually he showed up the night of the 13th, like 2 hours after, you know, when I get back to the house or whatever.
Yeah.
And
which is still probably encouraging, right? Cause you know, he's there.
It was, but after that, he disappeared. Like I'm like, man, he must have smelled me something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I start second guessing everything and I'm starting to get nervous.
Yeah. But, don't blame you.
And I had the wrong wind. So I started just scouting from afar. Like that. I said it was my seventh hunt that I killed him, but some of the other hunts was, you know, 600 yards away, scouting with binoculars, setting, trying to
figure homework out, hunts. Out,
doing my homework.
Yeah.
And I went back to work after 4 days, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16. I hunted those days and then my wind was just wrong. So I'm like, I'm wasting my time up here. I'm going to go back to work and work through the weekend. I know there's a big cold front coming in. And not only that, the moon, the evenings were going to be good and the mornings were going to be good. I learned that from Terry Drury. Thank you.
Yeah.
But, when the moon is hanging high in the mornings, it's normally really good for the morning hunts. And when the moon is rising of the evening, it's really good. Well, I had all that pushing together for me and I didn't have him on camera, but my boss said, you better go try it. And I really wanted to, but when he gave me the okay,
yeah,
I packed my stuff, headed straight to Kansas.
How far a drive is that for you? Cause you're from Oklahoma, right?
It was about a 3-hour drive.
Okay. So yeah, you got to plan ahead a little bit. You can't just like just leave right now and go.
No, no. And I hurried up there, and I actually made that first evening set, and I only saw two does, and I'd been kind of discouraged because that's all I had been seeing. It had been relatively slow until the morning that I was able to shoot him. But
yeah,
going into that morning, I woke up and my cell cam had texted me and said he was in front of my camera right then. And I
at that moment, like he was there right now.
The second I had set my alarm to wake up to go hunting, I looked in front of my camera and I'm like, oh my God, I've got it. So I rush around and I throw on my, I rush around, take a shower, I bathe down a nose jammer. I try to do anything I can to up the odds a little bit.
Get the advantage.
Yeah. And the night before I talked with one of my buddies about it. I had the wrong wind to go in, but the thermals, I was kind of uphill. And if I waited till the sun was kind of, you know, coming up, my thermals should be pushing over them. Well, I'm really nervous as I'm pushing in.
I can see why.
I was real nervous. Well, I end up having a belly crawl about a quarter of a mile because I was scared of getting skylit as I was going in. And I finally got set up and he's nowhere to be seen. Like I looked at my phone, I wasn't getting any texts, nothing. He had disappeared. And I see three does over off to my right. About 15 minutes later, the sun's kind of just starting to creep up a little bit.
And are you sitting in this cedar tree at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't have very much cover. And I knew on a deer like this, I was going to have to try some unorthodox tactics. Just,
yeah,
I had to push what I had because this was the end of that cold front too, to try to
force the situation to get your opportunity, because not only are you 3 hours away from home and your boss is probably like, man, get back. And so you're trying.
My son's missing me too. It was hard.
Yeah, that don't make it easier at all. So you're trying to get it done while you have that opportunity of this front. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I saw those three does off to the right, my heart immediately started pounding because I get excited. I'm made up with it, man. I love hunting just like the rest of us do. But I'm like, man, he's probably going to pop out with them. I had my hopes up, and then about 10 more minutes went by and nothing. I'm like, man, I've just blown the opportunity at the biggest deer I've ever had on camera. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to come together. And then about 5 minutes after that, I hear some rattling, some antlers kind of rattling together.
Mm-hmm.
And to the left, there was a little basket rack buck inside of his rat. They was just barely tickling. You know, they're just playing. It was.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sun was just about to crest the horizon. And like he looks bigger than the pictures. And I start breathing so hard, the scope completely fogs up. And I'm like,
how far is he at this point when you see him?
He's at 200 yards.
200. So in the wheelhouse.
Yeah. And I got to throw out shout out to my buddy, Laramie O'Leary with, L&L Outdoors. He loaned me his, muzzleloader, and it's a new CVA Paramount. It shoots flat. I mean, he told me I could go, borrow it. I ordered one from him. It hadn't made it in. So it was the reason I'm throwing a shout out to him. He let me borrow his personal muzzleloader. And he had it sighted in already, but I shot and it was perfect. So he had it zeroed at 200, and the deer was at 186 yards. So
perfect.
I felt very comfortable at that range. Mm-hmm. But back to it. I can get a little sidetracked here.
No, hey, that's fine, man. That's just storytelling, you know. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna do that to you, because there might be a detail that I'm like, man, I gotta know that. You know what I mean? That's why I was like into the story, but you know, if you're tucked in a cedar tree and you see him, it's like, man, how far? Because if he's 50 yards, I'd be like losing my mind, you know. But I mean, even 200 of the deer like this, it's still, you're in the wheelhouse. It's, you can lose your mind a little.
Oh no, I did too. I did. And I was scared of busting those does. They were still to the right when I looked over and saw him. But my scope finally cleared back up after getting so excited. I actually had to pull my head away and bring it, like I had to breathe for 45 seconds to let it. I'm like, just, he's a deer. He deserves a clean, ethical shot.
Of course.
You need to calm down, calm your nerves. Well, I got back on him and I get settled in. I had a tripod and everything, you know, because I wouldn't shoot out that far unless I felt really comfortable.
Yeah, of course.
So I go to put a little bit of pressure on the trigger and I have it right, like I have it right on the front of his shoulder because he's quartered two harder than I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to wait for him to turn broadside. Well, I'd only shot that muzzleloader one time before.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I put just a little bit too much pressure. And that the bucks had just pulled apart. And I put a little bit too much pressure. And it surprised me. It went off. And but I looked up and I seen white belly. And I was just, I mean, I had tears rolling out of my eyes. I called my best friend. I called my boss to thank him, you know, like it was kind of a cluster, to be honest. Like if you know me, that's, things aren't always orthodox. Like,
well, that's a lot going on. Like your brain's trying to process the situation. So when it went off, you probably were like, oh crap.
Oh and yeah. Then, yeah.
So then,
but I knew I was solid. So I was actually, I was a little relieved that went off because I knew I was right on him, but I wasn't trying to quite shoot yet.
I get you.
It was kind of like a catch 22, you know, but whenever I looked up and seen white belly, I was like, okay.
Was it like classic TV muzzle loader? You know, it's like fogs everything out, then it clears off and then you see the belly, or how was it?
No, with this, this shoots that Buckhorn 209.
You know, and
it didn't fog up. It didn't fog up real bad. I immediately looked up and seen that little buck running off, and I only saw one deer running away. Before I saw the white belly, I only saw one deer running, and I was like, oh, please, 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 please. And I was looking with my eye, and finally, when I saw that white belly, I didn't yell, I didn't anything. I just kind of sat there and
took in the moment.
I just took in the moment, cried. And then I you know, when I was calling my buddy, I was like, I couldn't hardly talk. And he's like, dude, you've got to just go get after that deer. And I called my boss as well, but
I
was trying to get reloaded, getting everything out of there. And I made sure I got reloaded. I didn't want to get up there and him.
Yeah. Just in case.
But it, when I finally made it up to the deer, it just felt so surreal.
I can only imagine, man. So did you, all right, I need to know, because when I shoot a deer, if I could see him land, I kind of like mosey my way up there and kind of like soak in the anticipation of it, you know what I mean? Like I kind of milk it
because
you live for that moment, you know.
And that's kind of what those phone calls were about. They were I know I was hyperventilating, but it was a whisper, you know. I was 200 yards away, and that's kind of what those phone calls were about, was trying to share the moment with friends. Because
of course
I enjoy that's one thing. I used to do some filming, and I still do some self-filming. I didn't do this because I didn't want to mess it up.
Right.
But it's just fun sharing the outdoors with other people and people that you love, you know? So.
Definitely. Well, I mean, I had a couple buddies. I actually was fortunate enough to have two friends that killed big deer. One guy killed my buddy Ross killed like a 202 inch with his bow. And then my other buddy killed, I think it went like 196 or something with a big like club off the one side. And
we
named him Tommy Tomahawk. And so I'm hunting in Indiana and he calls me, you know, and I'm in the stand. I tagged out in Illinois. So I'm like low pressure, like just kind of relaxed hunting. And I see his name coming across my phone and I'm like, he did it. So I answer and he's like doing the same thing you're saying. It's like, and I'm like, slow down and take in the moment. Like, don't rush over there to him. Like, let your dad meet you at the gate and go get your dad, bring your dad with you. And like,
you know,
like, take in the moment for as long as you can and just like appreciate it. So that's what I do. That's why I was wondering that, you know, if you, cause a lot of guys excitement, you see guys on some TV shows will run up in there and.
Oh no, you know, when I was younger, I'd made that mistake before, actually with turkeys. I'd done that with a turkey before and it got away.
Yeah.
And after that happened, I was like, I'm just not going to let that happen with another animal. I'm going to get reloaded and make sure before I walk up there. And
see, I'm the opposite with like an archery turkey. If I shoot an archery turkey, I'm out the blind running after it.
Okay, with the archery turkey, yes.
Yeah, gun turkey.
I'd be running after it. But But I would be bringing my bow. Before, I had ran up there without any, without my shotgun or anything, and I got up and took off. So I was unprepared, and that wasn't going to happen with this one.
No, no way. So tell me about getting up to this buck.
Well, there was no ground shrinkage. I honestly was thinking this deer, I thought he was going to score low to mid 80s.
Yeah.
Which my biggest deer in the past was 151. So this was a big, big jump for me.
Yeah.
If he would have scored 165, I would have been thrilled, which I thought he was bigger, but if he was in the 180s, I'd be really thrilled. But when we started adding all the numbers together, the neighbor actually had some pictures of this deer and he knows my cousin. He wanted to come over and see.
Mm-hmm.
He was there to keep us honest while it was my best friend who was scoring the deer, but he ended up going 195 7/8. And when I heard that, my jaw just really dropped. I'm like, man, I was going to be happy if I ever killed, you know, a couple 170 inch deer, but to go up into 190s was
the super giant, man.
Yeah. I just felt really blessed.
Yeah. I can only imagine. That's an absolute stud, man. And
special animal.
You have the rack with you.
I do. I took him to the processor and then took him to get mounted, and he cut it off, and I'm going to bring it back to him when we're done.
Yeah. It's one of those, hey, can I take the rack with me? I don't trust anybody.
Yeah. I don't want anybody stealing that from the shop right there, but it's,
wow.
I don't know if I can get them all. I may have to scoot back some.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Man, he is cool.
He just had a lot of character. He had 16 scoreable. Like you can see right here, his G2 was split here. You know, he's going to, he's going to gross. He grossed one. I don't know what he netted yet.
It don't matter, man. That's what he is. He, that's what I would say.
Scoreable. Here's one of the kickers he had on the side. And this is one thing I loved about him. He carried his here on his G2 or on his 2, 3, 4, 5 between his 5 and main beam there.
Yeah.
That is actually would have been one, or like, look how much mass he carries.
Yeah.
Right there. He just, the thing that surprised me most is why he went so big was the mass on this deer.
And he's just got a big wide frame. He's just really impressive looking the way he carries everything through.
I didn't really want to share this on the podcast because I didn't really want anybody else knowing, but
don't say anything that you don't want out there.
Oh no, it's okay. There was another really big deer, probably in the mid 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, that opening week, I'd seen some does, but I saw him right at last shooting light one last night. And I had really thought about shooting him, but I'd made up my mind that I was just going to hunt him,
but man,
from 150 to whatever. And then,
yeah.
But it all ended up paying off, and it was,
that's an absolute giant, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think within a day of you shooting that, I got text messages, from Mark about it.
He goes, cool.
Check
cool.
this out. I'm like, oh man, that is a stud.
Well, so, like I used to film for Terry, and, I got a hold of Mark and Terry. I asked Mark about, you know, John Dittmer, you know, taxidermy, and and he said, well, send me pictures, see what you got. And he had nothing but nice things to say. And I really appreciated Mark, and I appreciated Terry. I enjoyed our conversations, and I really enjoyed my time with you guys too. I learned more than I could even, like,
yeah, I can only imagine, man.
Being around those guys. So.
Well, dude, I'm happy for you on that deer. That is awesome. And to get it, so October 1st is when our season opens here. So at the time of this recording, it's season here in Illinois and Iowa today, just open, but it's hotter than heck. But I'm going to probably get out and try and wax a doe or something in one of my like low pressure areas or something like that. But
cool, man.
Like doing this, I'm hoping this is rubbing some good juju off.
I know. I hope so too. our opener was actually today in Oklahoma as well. So good luck to everybody out there.
It's tomorrow, cool, man. You got pressure off you.
Tomorrow's my birthday. I've always wanted to kill a birthday buck, but I told my wife after I killed this one, I'm not going to do much more hunting the rest of the year. But I was talking to her last night about maybe going tomorrow, said my birthday. I said, well, you already killed a buck. Why do you need to go again? I said, well, I've always wanted to kill a birthday buck.
My birthday. Well, happy birthday, man. Hopefully you can pull that off. I mean, you got to feel good about, you know, getting a super giant like that, buck of a lifetime. And then now, like, pressure's off, like days that it's not perfect, like weather condition wise, like you can hang out with your boy and not feel like that hunting guilt. Like, I should be out there, you know, or whatever. Like, I have that eats at me if I have a tag and I'm like, I should be going, but it's hard to leave the family sometimes. And so
it's going to be a lot easier to set at home and hang out with my son and just relax some on the weekends now.
I love it, man. That thing's an absolute giant. So, like, were you just having a bunch of people hit you up about it, or is there anything else? Like, you know, you said the neighbor had trail cam pictures. Did you learn any more about the deer besides the neighbor?
I did. I had one more thing, and I can show you here. Mm-hmm. My I made friends with the guy that processed the deer. He had let me take him, freeze him, you know, get, and then so I could take him back out that evening, take some nice evening pictures.
Yeah.
But he texted me last night and he said, you want to add something cool, something cool to the story on your deer. He found a broadhead in the shoulder of my deer. So he had been shot last year. Here you can see it buried in the fatty tissue. I don't know how we can see it, but
it's kind of focusing. Oh yeah. Maybe you can send those to me and I'll overlay them. We'll see how graphic it is.
But he found a broadhead in the deer. And so I apparently it had to be from last year because there was no fresh cuts or anything.
Yeah.
So apparently he was pretty big last year too, or somebody.
But the neighbor never said anything like, oh, I hit this buck last year or anything like that.
No, but there was hunting pressure from northeast, south, west. I mean, there was pressure from every corner. So it was probably a different neighbor who shot him.
I'm wondering if once this podcast comes out, if you'll get somebody like, hey man, that I hit that buck, or I didn't realize it, but that's the buck I shot. You know what I mean? Something like that.
You know, and if so, that'd be really cool. So he could know the, you know.
And maybe you could get some trail cam photos from the year prior. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, because this was my first year on that farm. So.
Well, it worked out.
That was really cool to have. Yes. Yes.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me in the middle of the day like this. And man, just it was awesome talking to you, and kill a birthday buck, man. And then we'll do another giant tracker segment with your next one.
If I shoot, you know, a 120 inch 8-point, you know, old deer, I'll be happy. So
yeah,
I'm not expecting another one like this for quite a while, but.
Hey man, I mean, it really is a buck of a lifetime, but I've seen crazier stuff. You know, there's, you know, one of my buddies, Ross, he shot a 200 and he's like, oh, that'd be the biggest deer I ever shoot. Then he shoots another one 5 years later. That'd be the biggest deer I ever shoot. Then last season shot a SCS 3-200 wide tip.
Well, hopefully we can keep the ball rolling. It wouldn't hurt my feelings any. I'd feel blessed, but I'm happy with where I'm at right now. So
when I grew up hunting in Fulton County, Illinois, and one of the guys I grew up hunting with, my dad killed 191 inch, like mainframe 8, just a giant. And I always remember him saying, deer like that just don't come around. And I was like, man, that is so true. It's just not common for a lot of people to have deer like that come around. So you'll go down as a legend in your family, I'm sure, because of that deer, which is cool.
Well, thanks, man. I knew getting those pictures that, I mean, I've ran cameras on some pretty nice places for a long time now and never had anything like that. And I knew I had to put the time in and everything in my power to try to get it done. And luck, there was a lot of luck came together.
Yeah. Well, it's cool because, you know, this is the third giant tracker segment we've done. And so far, everybody we've talked to is very aware of the quality of the animal they shot and very respectful and appreciative of it. And that, I love seeing that. I think that's how everybody should be, because you always kind of, I'm a measure, and I've talked to a lot of guys who've shot super giants, and a couple of them were kind of like, yeah, you know what I mean? Just not really into what it was. And I'm like, man, I don't get that.
No, the truth be told is I didn't care if I measured, like my buddies was really wanting to get the tape to him and everything, but I was so happy. And like, you know, if he was going to go 1.6, he was going to be happy. If he was going to be 200, I was going to be happy. But when he did put the tape to it and he was that, I was just, my mind was blown.
Just a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all about the animals and the time you get to spend with your friends in the outdoors, like we talked about, those memories is all we're going to have to take with us. So.
Exactly. Exactly, man. Well, I appreciate you doing this, and I appreciate everybody tuning in. to the third installment of the Giant Tracker segment. You got anything you want to close out with or anything?
Just good luck to everyone. Today is opening day in a lot of states. So everybody stay safe, and hope you guys have a great year.
For sure. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. You know what to do. Go shoot a giant. Appreciate you guys. Good luck out there.